The next case for argument, First versus Clark, Mr. Cermelli.
Good morning, Your Honors. It's a pleasure to be here today. I don't have much time. I'll try to get right to the point. There's no question in this case that my client spoke on a matter of public concern. There's no question in this case that my client was retaliated against based directly upon that speech. The sheriff, in this case, the defendant, hangs his hat on the patronage slash policymaking exception to First Amendment liability.
Is there a table of organization of the sheriff's office in the record?
I do not believe so, Your Honor.
But is there anything? So there are these 23 people above the sergeants. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. That is correct.
So do we know who they are? You know, is it a
It's somewhat fluid when people retire or are hired, but there are 23 members of the command staff, which would be lieutenants and above, plus the sheriff. There are 43 at the time of this action.
Right,
43 sergeants. And just under six.
Besides the lieutenants and captains, are there? So the sheriff is a political appointment, presumably.
He initially was appointed and then ran and was elected.
And then he ran. So, does he have any? Apart from this, you know, the public relations guy, does he have any? What you might call, you know, civilian assistance as opposed to the.
He would have a personal
captain and lieutenant.
He would have a personal
but
secretary.
There's no sort of. Assistant sheriff in the sense of someone who takes over from him if he's absent.
Oh, I'm sorry. There certainly is. That would be the inspector, Kevin Carr. That is the sheriff's
inspector. So he's the kind of deputy in the.
He, in a sense, he's the deputy sheriff. He was he's the number two man.
So he would presumably be a political or policymaking.
Presumably he would. I think in Wisconsin, given the existence of Chapter 164...
So would that apply to the inspector as well?
I believe it would. Chapter 164 does not discern between non-policy-making law enforcement and policy-making law enforcement.
First, to police officers, though. Would the inspector be a police officer within the meaning of that statute?
Yes, sir. He would have law enforcement capabilities. He could arrest individuals, certainly. And you know, that's our legislature's policy decision. They could have made an exception for individuals such as an inspector who would otherwise be considered a policymaker, no question. They chose not to. I think this case is interesting because it provides what I see as a variety of significant issues. Number one, and you've touched on it, whether the patronage exception should apply at all to law enforcement officers in Wisconsin, given the Law Enforcement Officers Bill of Rights. My position is it should not. I believe we have this interplay here between federal law and state law, and I think I've briefed it appropriately, that the federal law, when it is deficient, when it does not provide a remedy, then you seek the state law, as long as it fulfills the remedial purpose of the federal legislation. Chapter 164 certainly does that. It affirmatively allows law enforcement officers to speak, to affiliate, or to refrain from doing so without.
So your point, I gather, is that the legislature has basically made a judgment that police officers do not have the kind of policy-making positions that require that they adhere to their superiors' policy views. Is that right?
That's certainly one way to put it. I would also phrase it, you know, the Wisconsin legislature has said that political affiliation or support is not a valid requirement for the effective performance.
Well, I like the way Judge Ripple put it, actually, because I think the question is, has the legislature decided that these officers, they're professionals. So when they're doing their police work, politics, political loyalty, and so on doesn't come into it. It's like they're doctors or something, right?
Well, I think that's chapter one.
So we wouldn't say that a doctor. We wouldn't want doctors to be hired and fired on a political basis, right? So you wouldn't want a doctor. You wouldn't want a hospital saying because a doctor had taken some, had made a political speech, he that would be somehow disqualifying because political loyalty is part of a professional's role. So aren't you saying that the political loyalty to whoever happens to be the sheriff is not part of the police officer's job description?
Yes, sir. It seems to me that Chapter 164, however, does make an exception to what I am arguing, and I need to point that out to the court. And it deals with when the officer is on duty or otherwise acting in his or her official capacity. All right. So my client wasn't on duty when he made his when he spoke. He wasn't acting in his official capacity when he spoke. He was representing his union as the president of his union in response to inquiries from the press. So I think that might have some relation to Judge Ripple's question.
But policymaker aside, because you point out this is pretty well structured by the legislature, and it seems if, based on this decision, where, of course, the sheriff disclaims any political motive and says that is not what he's doing, he had other concerns about unity of purpose and vision and mission when he was there. But he was given a list of 14 from which he had the discretion to choose. And it's true that Mr. Quist was second on the list, but he didn't have to pick him, and he didn't.
Correct.
And he went through and interviewed several others and picked some, skipped others. Some were temporary.
Correct.
So it seems to me he fully exercised his discretion set up in the structure, and this idea of a policymaker is kind of a, you know, I don't think it's a very good argument for personally, but I think he certainly has the discretion to do what he did.
With all due respect, I disagree. It wasn't my position to make a policymaking argument. That was my Mr. Scott's and the sheriff's. I believe that would get to a Pickering analysis, and that's what I hope to finally get to. If this court reverses the summary judgment, did the sheriff have to promote a deputy first? No, sir, he did not. You are correct in that. However, the sheriff did not deny and actually admitted that he refused to promote deputy first, who was number two on the list, directly because of his protected speech.
Are you suggesting that the Pickering analysis is the more appropriate way to view this case? That's the lens we ought to be using, as opposed to the Elrod and Branty lens?
Yes, sir, by all means. And my Mr. Scott seems to argue that what my position is creating some sort of strict liability for a sheriff in a First Amendment analysis. And I hope I haven't argued that in my briefs. It certainly wasn't my intention. It's simply that we do not apply an Elrod, Bronte, or Upton analysis.
May I ask one other question? My understanding is that there was an examination for the rank of promotion to the rank of sergeant. Am I correct?
Yes, sir, you are.
Who mandated that examination? Is there a statute or an ordinance or a regulation that says that sergeants will be, candidates for sergeants will take this examination?
There is the Milwaukee County Code of General Ordinances and the civil service laws in Milwaukee County that would address that. I don't think those are part of your record, although I'm not certain.
No, we're allowed to take judicial notice of those things, but do they mandate an examination be given?
They do. I believe I'm up. May I answer your question?
Of course.
They do mandate that an examination be given. They mandate certain other things, such as the county or the appointing authority, which would be the sheriff, addressing or setting subjects and weights and measures prior to the time of the examination. Yes. And then, of course, the county, by county general ordinances, the sheriff is provided with a list of eligibles, which is 10 for the top 10 of the examinees for the first position, and the top two thereafter for each an additional position, and that's from what he can pick. Thank you.
Just one second. Judge, could he have a little more time?
Of course.
Before I want to just explore something before you go away, so that
yes, sir.
It's not just there to take up your rebuttal time. What you just pointed out, this first 10, if there is one position available, then a list of 10 is submitted. Is that
yes,
correct?
Sir, that's correct.
Okay, and so he can select from that. If there's two available, it goes to 12. The three
correct.
Available goes to 14.
Correct.
And in that event, the sheriff has the discretion to choose the person who he wants.
That is correct, as long as he does not otherwise discriminate against a non-chosen individual
non-chosen that were in the top.
There were several, 14. Right, and none of those.
In fact, one of them went all the way down to 24, and another was, 13. But I'm just looking at it from the standpoint of his discretion. Now, your client, Fuest, asked for a meeting, and the sheriff gave it to him.
Yes, sir.
He said, here are the reasons. And I jotted a few of them down. He says he was looking for candidates who shared his vision and mission and unity of purpose, which are kind of nebulous. You would label that as, that's, his political retaliation. But on the other hand, he says it wasn't, and he says that this is something he's focused on. He wants people who are going to carry out his mission, and he chose from among those, I guess you object to one of them, that were on the list. Now, why do we dig into it further than that?
He could choose anybody he wanted to under the first 10. He could choose anybody from, actually, I believe, the first 14, given the number of openings. He can't go back past that. He did go past that. He acknowledged, other than these nebulous concepts of vision and mission, that the sole reason that he chose not to promote first was that speech.
Does everybody on this list that passed over have the same claim?
No, sir. They didn't speak.
So what about them?
They
kept their mouth shut, so they don't have a case, huh?
They kept their mouth shut, and they would not have a First Amendment case. That is correct, sir.
Okay.
Thank you.
I heard you to say that it was a Pickering case, but not an Elrod Branty case.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Did I hear you say it was a Pickering case, but not an Elrod Branty case?
That would be my position.
I don't understand. Isn't the standard the same?
I think in Pickering, if I can demonstrate that my speech was on a matter of public concern, the burden then goes to the defendant to demonstrate that his governmental interest should overcome that speech.
Right.
And Elrod and Bronte really says, defendant, you don't have to address these seven factors because it's a policy-making employee, so we won't get there. What I'm saying
but
is...
But wouldn't it be rare for an official to be forbidden to fire a policy-making official for expressing his views, right?
Would it be rare?
Wouldn't it be odd to forbid... Suppose you have someone who is classified as a policy-making official, and he goes out and makes a speech which his superiors don't like. They can, once he's classified as a policy-making official, doesn't that mean that his free speech is sort of at an end? Because anything he says is a policymaker,
As long as the speech is primarily related to his job duties and the discretion that he has.
You're saying if he said something that was totally unrelated, he's talking about abortion or something like that, and he's fired, then you're saying that could be a Pickering case, even though he'd have no...
Assuming that the individual you're talking about is a policymaker, yes. I mean, one of the cases, I forget what it was, I believe it was you, Your Honor, indicated that a sheriff who's an avid hunter can't fire a policymaking deputy because the policymaking deputy is an animal rights expert. So it's got to be related to the job.
Okay, well, thank you. And we'll give you time to rebut, so you don't have to worry about that. So, Mr. Scott, we'll hear from you.
Thank you, Your Honor. My name is James Scott. I'm from the law firm of Linder & Marsack in Milwaukee, and I represent the Milwaukee County Sheriff, David Clark.
Mr. Scott, so we don't forget the point, perhaps you'd be kind enough to give us your view on the basis for the examination that was given for promotion to the rank of sergeant. Is that based on a state statute, a city ordinance, a regulation? What is the
I believe it's based on. That? I believe that's based on Milwaukee County ordinances.
I see. So that the sheriff, that this promotion to the rank of sergeant is within the civil service.
Yes. One of the themes of the criticism made by Deputy First in the newspaper was, and if you look at that article, the sheriff was attempting to hire a community service officer outside of the dictates of the civil service system. So I suspect that the Milwaukee County ordinances are what are the source of the examination process.
Well, I have. What I find very troublesome in your position, I can't understand how a first-level supervisor, which is what these sergeants are, can be a policy-making official. It's so they're so low, right? So I don't get that.
Well,
of course, they exercise discretion, but so does the policeman on the beat exercise discretion.
Well, except
we've had these cases recently. Judge Ripple had one. I had one. Evidentiary differences, but you know they involve wardens and assistant wardens of Illinois prisons. These are, you know, thousands of inmates, hundreds of guards in various tiers, various levels of guards, and we were just concerned with either the warden or the assistant warden. So these prisons had one warden and two assistant wardens. Well, these guys really at the top, and even there, you know, it was debatable. Whether they were policymakers, but I don't see how you go down into the ranks of the police force and have the sergeants policymakers. I wouldn't. My guess would be that maybe this inspector would be, but not the lieutenants or captains. It's all, you know, it's a stratified paramilitary type system. These are professionals exercising professional judgment. They're not making policy, although they're exercising some discretion.
Well, there are four prior decisions from this court recognizing the fact that deputy sheriffs,
deputy sheriff is a very ambiguous title, because a deputy sheriff can be the sheriff's deputy, the number two guy, but it can also be just the cops. They're often just called deputy sheriffs. So you have to look at what these people are actually doing. These sergeants are, as I say, they're just the first-line supervisor. There wouldn't be much to a civil service, which is what Branty and Elrod protect, whether wisely or not. There wouldn't be much to civil service protection if all supervisors were deemed policymakers.
Well, I would submit that the prior decisions of this court, Your Honor, three of those involved people...
Well, why don't you answer directly?
All right. The structure of the Milwaukee County Sheriff's Department.
This is the structure of every police department, right?
Basically, yes.
Well, is there actually law that says that everybody above the beat patrolman level, all the police sergeants in the United States, are policymakers?
No, but there are several other circuits.
But doesn't that strike you as rather extravagant?
No, not in this circumstance. There's 43 sergeants responsible for 600-plus deputies.
You think that's different, some different ratio from other police forces?
I suspect probably not.
Right. So we're talking about the whole, you know, there are in fact 700,000 police in the United States. Of whom probably, you know, 50,000 or more, the sergeants, lieutenants, captains. All these people are policymakers?
In the context of an elected sheriff, I would submit that sergeants are, in fact, policymakers.
What difference does it make whether the sheriff is elected as to whether the deputy sheriff or the sergeants are policymakers?
Well, I think the level of loyalty that's necessary the kind of discretion that's exercised.
Why? Don't elected officials want to have loyalty from their subordinates?
Absolutely. And that's why they
Why is an elected official entitled to more loyalty?
Not necessarily entitled to more loyalty, but demands more loyalty.
Well, if he's not entitled to it, he can't demand it on pain of firing a person who doesn't agree with him politically, right? What does his demand have to do with it?
Well, the First Amendment, as developed by this court, has recognized that elected officials are entitled to a certain level of loyalty by their policy-making employees.
But why do you think non-elected officials are not not entitled to the same loyalty?
Well, I think they are also entitled to a level of loyalty as well, but not to the degree of an elected official.
Why?
The voters have selected that elector, made the decision to put that person in office because of his stated policies and plans. And he has an entitlement, I believe, to expect that those who are his policymakers will carry out and implement that policy as reflected in the interests of the voters who've selected him in the first place.
Most of those cases, though, let's face it, in this case we have 500 and some deputy sheriff, right?
Right.
And they're not policymakers. So I think to lock on to this deputy, most of those cases are where there really is a political connection. And a policymaker usually is someone who is a political ally. And they get broomed when others cannot. I don't think you'd make the case that the sheriff can just fire any one of these sergeants or demote them, would you? One's already appointed?
Well, there the union contract would stand in the way of his ability
right.
to do
but
that.
What I was exploring before is it seems that there is a structure here that gives the sheriff the discretion to choose from a list, which he did. Now, there's some objection that he picked number 24, and I don't know what that all is about, but several people were not picked who were on the top 14.
Correct.
Right? And the reasons he set out here, the vision, mission, and unity of purpose, when he confronted him, he gave him those reasons. And that's why. Now, I don't know whether that's within his discretion, simply to say, look, I prefer the other people. And that's it. Is there something more than that?
It is. This was not a strict take number one, two, and three kind of system.
Yeah, and he didn't. He picked one automatically. I don't think he interviewed her. He interviewed some others that he didn't pick. He didn't interview this guy and some others.
Correct.
And then he picked them. I don't know. We don't know why he picked them, why he chose some. I assume there's some basis of expertise and need and some other things where it could make a discretionary choice. A sergeant may be needed over at the jail, or maybe in drug enforcement or something else. And they want to pick the person maybe has the best qualified. But that's what I'm looking at, is this discretion within the structure of the statute, and that's what he did. Now, this policy-making thing, as Judge Posner points out, it's pretty attenuated.
Well, I think it's important to remember that the actual line deputies who are being supervised by these sergeants are pretty much autonomous. They're out on the freeway, they're at the airport, they're at the jail, they're in the court system, all areas of responsibility for the Sheriff's Department in Milwaukee County.
And the sergeant's in charge of the jail or charge of the airport or in charge of traffic control. I'm sure there are different places in that sergeant's, and, so that's a structure just like.
But when that policy direction comes down from the Sheriff's Department and his command staff, at the headquarters, that goes out to the sergeants who are responsible for implementing that policy. And if they don't like the fact that Sheriff Clark decides he wants to put emphasis on...
But this is always true in a hierarchy, right? Each level has a range of discretion, right down to the bottom.
Correct. But
that's why your position is too extreme. You're asserting that any person with supervisory authority is a policymaker.
Well, I think what I'm saying is in the context of a sheriff's department, we're officers.
In the context of anything, do you have an example where a supervisor is not a policymaker?
I would say a lower-level supervisor, for example, inside of a welfare department or some kind of an agency where the higher-level people
understand.
Are right there.
You suppose you're a low-level supervisor in a welfare department. You have 15 people under you. And, of course, they come to you with their problems, and they say, this person, you know, signed his name upside down. And so this low-level supervisor will have a span of authority to deal with those problems. If the supervisor has no discretionary authority, then the next level has to handle all the problems. So that's why you have a hierarchy, so that each supervisory level can handle. It's called, you know, management by exception. So the lowest level people, they do the routine stuff, and the supervisors don't pay any attention. But if there's an exception to the normal way of doing it, then it's bounced up to the first level supervisor. If they can't handle it, it keeps going up. But most of the time, a supervisory layer makes the, you know, implementation judgment, just like these sergeants.
The difference, though, in my example, I think, is that the people who are in the welfare department sitting at desks where there are other higher-level supervisors physically present distinguishes that type of employee from these road deputies and deputies at the airport who are essentially on their own. When they come on roll call, they get their instruction from their sergeant. He's the one that's implementing the policy that comes down from headquarters. And then they're off on their own.
We're not talking about policemen, but we're talking about firemen and linemen and process servers. There are a whole lot of people whose work is not in an office under the visual surveillance of their supervisors. And so you're saying whenever someone supervises someone who isn't in the office doing the work but is doing it in the field, that person is a policymaker?
No, I'm not necessarily expanding it that far, but I am saying that there is a level of discretion that police officers have, deputy sheriffs have, and when you combine that with the fact that they're out and essentially unsupervised, that combines.
What about Judge Mannion's question? Has there been a judicial determination as to why the sheriff passed over first?
I believe that the magistrate's judge's decision was, the finding was that, in fact, it was because of his First Amendment activity, or at least the speech, the quotes in the newspaper.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr.
You.
Scott. Mr. Sermel, your time has expired, but we'll give you a minute if you have anything you want to add.
Thank you. Just a minute. Judge Mannion, is it? I believe you asked about how the sheriff could pass over individuals within the top 10 or 14, even though he has discretion with which to choose individuals from that pool, and that he utilized the terms vision, mission, and unity of purpose, and isn't he allowed to do that and to have some modicum of discretion? Yes, the civil service rules allow him to do that, but by using the terms only, vision, mission, and unity of purpose, I see those as code words. Those are, I want people who will not speak out, who will not unionize. That's my belief. Remember, first was speaking on behalf of the union. I believe, and I believe the record shows this, that the sheriff retaliated against first, not just because of that speech, but also to send a message to the union. Don't do this, otherwise you don't get anywhere in my department.
Well, this is a problem, though, and that's why I explore it. What reasons can he use? You can use expertise. You can use communication skills. There are lots of reasons why you would pick one or two out of 14. And unless there's something that is really restricted, Now, let's face it, if there's somebody that's criticizing you all the time or spouting off, et cetera, I can understand why you may not want him. You'd rather appoint someone else that might be a little more friendly or favorable or somebody who's a little more, I don't want to use the word judicious here, but that maybe uses his own discretion. He wants a sergeant to be a cop and not somebody who's on a pedestal. I don't know whether I can understand what the First Amendment right and that kind of thing, where you have a right to say certain things, but he doesn't have a right to this job.
Deputy First?
Huh?
He does not. Deputy First does not have a right to the sergeant's job. I would agree with you there.
Okay. Well,
is he seeking reinstatement or damages or both? Or
he is seeking damages. He
or
was
promotion. I shouldn't say reinstatement. He's seeking promotion and and damages, or just promotion.
He was seeking damages and promotion. This is not part of the record, but he has since retired. Chose not to deal
so
with this.
So this is a damages claim.
This is a damages claim anymore.
Okay. Well, did you have?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Well, thank you very much to both counsel. Next case for argument is.